The Quiet American stars Michael Caine and Brendan Fraser, with Doty Hai-Yen, Zi Ma, Robert Stanton, Holmes Osborne, Pham Thi Mai Hua, Quang Hai, and Rade Sherbeja. Casting Christine King, Associate Producer Steve Andrews, Original Music by Craig Armstrong, Costume Designer Norma Morisseau, Editor John Scott, Production Designer Roger Ford, Director of Photography Christopher Doyle, HKCS, Co-Producer Kathleen McLaughlin, Line Producer Antonia Barnard. Miramax and Intermedia Films present a Mirage Enterprises Saga Pictures IMF production, based on the novel by Graham Greene, screenplay by Christopher Hampton and Robert Shenkhan, produced by William Horberg and Staffan Arenberg. Executive producers Guy East, Nigel Sinclair, Moritz Borkman, Chris Sievenich, Sidney Pollack and Anthony Minghella. Directed by Philip Noyce. An opium pipe glows in the dark. The placid face of a young Oriental woman tilted to one side appears over a backdrop of swirling flames. The same girl gazes impassively as a fireball explodes behind her. A middle-aged European man dressed in black sits behind his typewriter with his hands clasped.
I can't say what made me fall in love with Vietnam. That a woman's voice can drug you. That everything is so intense. The colors, the taste, even the rain. Nothing like the filthy rain in London.
The title of the film, The Quiet American. Fishing boats bob on a river at night, the light from their lanterns reflecting in the water. Saigon, Vietnam, 1952.
They say whatever you're looking for, you will find here. They say you come to Vietnam and you understand a lot in a few minutes. But the rest has got to be lived. The smell, that's the first thing that hits you. Promising everything in exchange for your soul. And the heat. Your shirt is straight away a rag. You can hardly remember your name or what you came to escape from. But at night, there's a breeze. The river is beautiful. You could be forgiven for thinking there was no war, that the gunshots were fireworks, that only pleasure matters. A pipe of opium, or the touch of a girl who might tell you she loves you.
The body of a man floats on the water.
And then something happens, as you knew it would. And nothing can ever be the same again.
A man in a white suit gets up from his desk.
Monsieur Faller, thank you for coming in. I'm sorry to ask you at this hour.
Well, I know about as much as you do. He's an American, he's about 30. He works for the Economic Aid Mission. And I like him. He's a very good chap. Serious. Not like those noisy bastards down at the Continental. He's a quiet American.
Yes, a very quiet American.
He's dead, isn't he? Not guilty. I just put two and two together.
The body of the American is wheeled out of the morgue on a trolley. Inspector Vigo pulls back the sheet to reveal the naked corpse. Thomas Fowler gazes down at the young man's pale face and at the gash in his chest.
He was killed by a knife?
Vigo looks deeply into Fowler's face.
Can you identify him?
Yes. He was a friend.
Tell you the truth, I'm not completely sorry. These Americans are causing a lot of trouble to us. But still, a murder is a murder. Anything to help us?
Fowler looks squarely at Vigo.
Nothing at all.
Vigo recovers the body with the green sheet and invites Fowler to leave the morgue.
Please.
Fowler walks out past the trolley. A bearded man sits cross-legged on a rug in a street at night, ringing a bell. A young woman with long dark hair and wearing a cream au dai, a high-necked ankle-length tunic worn over baggy trousers, walks by him. She turns as if waiting for someone. Fowler appears in an upstairs balcony doorway and sees her waiting patiently in the street below. She turns her head and sees him. Fowler looks up and down the street, turns and hurries out of his spacious, unlit apartment. The entrance hall below is dark. A silver-haired old woman sits at the bottom of the stairs. A girl in pink fans herself. A young man cleans his bicycle. Fowler comes down the dingy staircase and walks across a single wooden plank that has been laid over a piece of floor where the tiling has been left unfinished. A paw print is visible in the wet cement. The young woman in cream sits down in front of Fowler in his apartment and looks up at him expectantly. He fixes her with his eyes.
Pile. Emma.
The girl watches his face closely.
Assassinated.
She blinks rapidly. She lowers her eyes and slumps back in her chair. Fowler lets go of her hands.
Pylemore.
Yes.
He was in love with me.
Yes, he was. I'm so sorry, Fowler.
I go to my mother's. I must think.
Fowler watches her delicate, unhappy face with tenderness as he thinks back. A blurred image comes into focus. Thomas Fowler, sitting at a cafe table in the shade, looks at his watch.
I met Pyle, where you meet everybody, at the Hotel Continental. I'm there every morning at 11. I'm English. I have habits. I drink tea. I'm a reporter, so I listen. I have a lover. I like to watch her arrive with her friends at the milk bar.
Fuang and a young woman go through a doorway.
And there was Alden Pyle, a face with no history and no problems. The face
Good
we
morning.
All had once.
I'm Alden Pyle.
I'm Thomas Fowler.
The London Times.
You've done your homework.
Well, I've read your articles. May I join you?
Please. And what brings you to Saigon, Mr. Pyle?
Well, I'm with the Economic Aid Mission. I'm on the medical side. My specialty is eye disease. Do you know trachoma? It's very common here. It's actually very easy to treat and prevent. You staying at the hotel?
No, I just dropped by for a cup of tea on the way to the office.
This is really a stroke of luck for me. You know, you're one of the few correspondents that has a reputation of actually going out into the field to see what's happening.
Not anymore. Besides, I have never thought of myself as a correspondent. I'm just a reporter. I offer no point of view, I take no action, I don't get involved. I just report what I see.
But you must have an opinion.
Even an opinion is a form of action.
Still, I'd really appreciate it if you could take...
Pyle was hungry for everything I could tell him about Vietnam and her fight for independence.
Well, you can start by not...
Why were the French losing the war? And why were the communists winning?
He signals through the window of the milk bar.
Then he saw Fuang.
Fuang turns to face the two men.
I should have realized how saving a country and saving a woman would be the same thing to someone like Pyle.
We've got to contain communism, or what they call communism.
What could be done, what should be done, what he thought, what he'd read. He made me remember there was a time when I had wanted to make a difference.
What is it, to watch liberty snuffed out?
Liberty is a very Western word. How do you define it for the Vietnamese?
By giving people the freedom to choose.
Okay, you give them the freedom to choose, they vote and they elect Ho Chi Minh. Things are more complicated than they seem.
Both men look up.
What was that?
A grenade.
Sounded like a car backfiring.
A week here and you'll know the difference.
It's been a genuine pleasure meeting you. Maybe we could eat dinner sometime.
Yes. I look forward to it.
Great.
Good morning.
Fowler comes down a narrow corridor into an office.
Morning, Hing. Anything new? Oh, corruption, mendacity.
I said new.
There is a rumor that the communists are planning an attack in the north, at Fatsim.
One of your contacts?
King is pouring tea.
Yes, sir. Oh, and a telegram.
Oh,
From the London office.
Mr. Stemmons, he says the paper has conducted a review of the foreign desk. He wants you based in London.
Christ.
I thought you liked London, sir.
I do, but I like it just where it is. I don't want to bloody go there. For what? Desk job? They probably think it's cheaper to let the wire services cover Vietnam. How many stories have we given them?
This year?
Yes.
Three?
Oh, shit.
The eyes in Fowler's hardened face flicker as he considers the situation. He turns to look at the map of Vietnam on the wall beside his desk. He traces his finger up the coastline.
Maybe I should go up there.
Where, sir?
Fatian.
It's not an easy place to get into with a communist attack.
Send a cable to Stemmings. Understand your current concern, stop. And working on a story of major proportions, stop. Suggest I remain in Saigon until completed, stop. Fowler.
Which story is that, sir?
I don't know. But I'm sure that you know someone who can get me in there.
At dusk, an old colonial building stands on the corner of a street, its windows dark. Inside the building, Fowler comes into his apartment. He peers down the hall towards the spacious reception room with its tiled floor and across at the canopied bed where a note and a single pink rose have been placed on a cushion. He picks up the note, lies on his front to read it, and a pair of delicate hands cover his eyes.
Ah!
Today, our anniversary, did you forget?
Can it be 2 years already?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, be careful with me. I'm old and fragile.
Not so old. Not so fragile.
With a provocative smile, Fuong, sitting astride him, undoes her bra and bends down to embrace him. Later, Fowler steers her through a crowded room.
Tom!
Alden Pyle.
Thomas.
Thomas. Hello.
Hello again.
Say, I'm here with some friends. I was wondering if you care to join us.
Fong, this is Mr. Pyle.
Alden, please.
Enchanté.
Enchanté aussi. C'est mon plaisir.
It's my pleasure.
My
please excuse, excuse my bad French.
Thomas, you know Joe? Joe Tunney from the American legation?
Yes, I know Joe. Overthrown any small countries recently?
Fowler sees conspiracies everywhere.
That's for sure.
Well, say, is it true that the communists are attacking Fatsian?
Well, how the fuck should I know? We only report victories.
The reason that I ask is because one of our medical teams wasn't allowed past Nam Dinh.
I was thinking of going up there.
It's a Catholic town, isn't it?
Yeah.
You got a date tonight?
Pretty strong against the communists. Bill.
She's got a date every night.
Well, you got your piece of ass, I want mine.
Pyle winces.
Pyle, fellas, let's go to the house of 500 girls.
Oh, no. No, thanks.
Well, I was planning on taking Mr. Fowler and Miss
Fowler.
We've
already got a table at the Arconcio.
Oh, well, that's great. You go eat at the Lock and Seal, and I'll get eaten next door.
Sounds like a plan. Come on, Bill. Walk with me. Gents?
Pyle escorts Granger out of the bar. Out in the busy street, the night market is bustling with customers and traders. A military policeman patrols the pavement as Fowler and Fuong ride up in a trishaw. Fowler points across at Pyle, struggling to keep Granger on his feet.
Seems like a nice young man.
What does he do?
Something with medical aid. You go and get us a table, and I'll go and rescue our Mr. Pyle.
He pays the driver.
Thank you.
Fuong walks into the restaurant as Fowler goes off to help Pyle. A Vietnamese woman in purple satin opens the door to Fowler, who comes into the roomy hallway of a brothel. He walks on through a chamber lit by round red lanterns hanging from the ceiling and candelabra. A man in a white suit lies on a bed smoking an opium pipe with one girl, while another massages his foot. Fowler moves past towards a bevy of girls, swaying, waving and smiling invitingly at a male customer sitting in a chair. As he comes nearer to the women, Fowler beckons to a girl in red, who glides up to him putting an arm around his neck. They walk on towards a red curtain. Girls are clawing at Pyle. Pyle tries to free himself.
Let's get out of here.
No, Sifini, no. I'm
put your arm around this one. If they think you've chosen one, they'll let you go.
Excusez-moi.
Put your arm
around.
As he heads for the exit, Pyle looks over his shoulder at Granger.
Back, Granger!
Who was the lady?
Fowler and Pyle come into the restaurant, which has a dance floor and a live band. Fowler waves at Huang, who waves back, and breaks away from the women she's talking to.
Miss Huang, I'm so sorry. Please forgive us for keeping you waiting.
I forgive you.
We had to make sure that Bill Granger got home.
Home?
A girl offers Pyle a ticket.
Sorry?
Tickets for the taxi dancers. With the girls here, you buy a ticket for a dance.
Buy a ticket. Maybe I dance with you.
With a shy smile, Pyle reaches for his wallet.
There you are.
And he pays the girl.
Shall we?
Huang smiles at Fowler, then escorts Pyle to the dance floor. Fowler watches as they step into the crowd of dancing couples. Pyle, moving woodenly, grins as he lets Huang guide him gently round. As the song comes to an end, Pyle makes no move to leave the dance floor. He gazes at Huang in wonder. She gives him a friendly smile. As the music begins, they dance again. Huang glancing reassuringly over to Fowler, who watches them warily.
Huang, it's a very beautiful name.
Phuong.
Phuong.
It means phoenix.
Oh. I thought it meant flower. Like the ones in your hair.
Do you like my hair? This is traditional style.
It's very nice.
Do you know Vietnamese?
Yeah, sure, try me.
When you dance, don't try to lead.
No, I only know two words. I know beer and talk.
Beer and haircut. A woman approaches Fowler.
Mr. Fowler?
Hello.
May I?
Of course.
Thanks.
She sits at his table.
Haven't seen you for a long time.
I'm away a lot.
Yes.
The woman turns to watch Pyle and Huang.
Who's he? Your friend?
His name is Pyle. He's with the American Economic Mission. He's from Boston, in America.
He's a very bad dancer.
Yes.
Married?
Not that I know of, no.
Pyle and Huang come over to their table.
This is Miss Hai, Fong's sister, Alden Pyle.
Very happy to meet you.
They shake hands.
Your father is a businessman?
No, he's a professor.
My sister is very good dancer, yes?
No, she's too good for me.
She's my only sister.
He's cute, the American. And money, too, says Miss Hai. Sometimes you're as vulgar as the French you hate so much, says Huang.
Your sister's a very pretty girl.
My sister is the most beautiful girl in Saigon.
I don't doubt that at all. Mr. Fowler's a very lucky man.
Huang smiles at Fowler.
My father was very sad. He had no grandchildren.
To Miss Hai.
Would you like a drink?
No. Thank you. My friends. So pleased to have met you. I hope we meet again soon. Perhaps you could arrange.
When I get back from the north.
You are going north?
Yes.
Then you must come and have dinner with me and my sister when Mr. Fowler is gone to cheer her up.
Well, thank you. I'd like that very much.
Miss Hai shakes Pyle's hand enthusiastically and gives Fowler an insincere smile.
What a nice woman.
Absolute saint.
She used to work in office, import-export.
Really?
She knows shorthand.
Does she?
Maybe you need someone.
Maybe we could work something out.
Miss Hai stands by the door, her arms folded, looking at them scornfully. Later, outside.
Please forgive me for dancing with Miss Fong so many times.
That's all right. I like watching her dance.
She's a very good dancer.
She should be. She used to do it for a living.
Well, what do you mean?
She was a taxi dancer, a hostess, here at the Arc-en-Ciel.
Oh, I thought you said she came from a good family.
She did, but the father died, so the sisters had to go out and earn a living.
Oh, well, that's too bad.
What?
Well, isn't that just a step up from the girls across the street?
Oh, good God, no. Took me 6 months to get her to go out on a date.
Oh.
They turn towards the bang.
Grenade.
A grenade.
So are you married?
Yes, I am.
They turn to see Fong come out of the restaurant. Bonsoir, mademoiselle. Fowler looks back at Pyle.
But not to her.
Fong joins Fowler and they move off. Pyle falls in behind with his white jacket slung over his shoulder. A light shines on Fowler's face. Opium is cooking on a plate. Fowler, lying down on his bed, cups the mouth of an opium pipe with one hand. Fong holds the other end of it. Fowler inhales and blows out the smoke. Fong watches him wistfully. She gets off the bed, picking up the opium tray and putting it down on a small table nearby.
There's something I haven't told you. I got a telegram from the paper asking me to go back to London.
So will you go?
I've cabled them, asking them to let me stay, but if they stop paying me, I'm not sure how we'll live.
I come with you to London.
I'd marry you if I could. You know that.
Yes. That's what I always tell my sister.
Curled up next to him on their carved wooden bed, Fong, in her lacy satin nightgown, turns to lie on her back.
You think your wife will get divorced?
I doubt it.
She turns back to him, clutching his hand, her eyes brimming as she looks deeply into his. With his fingers, he traces the outline of her heart-shaped face.
When did everything change? Maybe there isn't one moment. Cable from London calling me home, or watching them dancing together, or what followed between us, she and I, through the long night.
In daylight, people in coolie hats are getting onto boats and loading them with cargo by the riverside. Fowler is aboard a French patrol boat.
I was never brave. There I was, heading north. The fear of losing Fong, more terrifying than the fear of any bullet.
Fowler, in canvas hat and dark glasses, walks along a narrow jungle path with a soldier in front of him and behind him.
The communists attacked 4 days ago. We pushed them back only yesterday. We think there is 300 in this village. But you will not see them.
It's getting worse, isn't it? How long can you keep going?
A few months, maybe. My men are counting bullets.
A French soldier runs across a low bridge and scurries along a stone pathway, crouching down for cover. He signals to another soldier to run on. Fowler is walking with a unit of about a dozen soldiers.
Silence!
They look out through some trees overlooking the river.
Hey, couchez-vous!
The soldiers spread out and take up positions. A boat skippered by a figure in a coolie hat motors into view. One of the French soldiers takes aim. The shot hits the water next to the prow. The figure waves his hands.
No, don't shoot, don't shoot! America!
Pyle!
Diablo!
What the hell are you doing?
They wouldn't let my truck car team out, now I did, so I figured I might as well see what's going on for myself.
You know you're lucky to get here alive.
Pyle jumps onto a jetty.
It wasn't that hard after I hired a boat. It wasn't that expensive, actually. Yenna just bought it.
You are mad.
I'm mad?
Yes.
Have you ever seen anyone with trachoma, Thomas?
Yes, I suppose I have.
You know, it's not that easy to remain uninvolved.
Here, this way.
Not that easy to remain uninvolved.
They're walking through a village.
I had hidden for so long behind a typewriter. What we found there, what we saw in Fatsian, what did that do? To his zeal, to my detachment. The dead are not involved. Dead have no zeal. They are lying in wait. You see them, all their tenderness, and then they haunt you.
Communists?
Clearly, this is not the work of French soldiers.
It doesn't make sense. The communists don't kill townspeople. It is not in their interest.
Maybe another faction. There are so many of them, each with their own army.
Captain Sorrel is photographing the massacred villages strewn around them. Pyle stares, then turns away. Later, as the daylight fades, he and Fowler walking down a street, bustling with Vietnamese and French soldiers.
What's that book you're always reading?
York Harding, Dangers to Democracy.
American?
Yeah. He was out here a couple years back.
Was he here long?
I don't know. I heard him lecture once. Joe actually met him. He's the one who put forward the idea of a third force to run Vietnam. Not the communists and not the French.
Not the Americans?
No, we're not colonialists. Something that could really help these people.
Sorrel.
You have a gun, either of you?
No.
They shall attack again tonight. You don't want to be taken alive. Believe me.
He hands Fowler a pistol.
Shoot yourselves.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Stay inside that bunker.
Pyle and Fowler step down into the bunker as Sorrel walks off through the mud. In the unlit bunker, Pyle heats a can over a stove.
Do you want something?
No, thank you. Come on. You didn't come up to check your medical team. Joe Tunney sent you, right? A little intelligence work.
Pyle pokes at the contents of the can with his spoon.
I've never been very good at keeping secrets. There is another reason why I came up here.
A flare shoots into the sky, lighting the scene with a pale glow.
It's you.
Me?
You said that you might be coming up here.
Yeah.
Fowler listens intently.
The thing is, it's about four. Well, I guess it started that night when we were at the L'Arc-en-Ciel and I was dancing with her.
I didn't think you ever got close enough.
And then I had dinner with her and her sister last Saturday, and just when I was sitting there looking at her, it all just became so clear to me.
I see.
Look, Tom, none of this was planned. There's no way. I never, ever used to believe in love at first sight. But after seeing all those other girls in that awful place and thinking that Fong could very easily become one of them, I don't know, I want to protect her.
And what did she say when you offered her your protection?
I haven't told her yet.
You haven't told her?
No, I didn't think it'd be right. I wanted to speak with you first. Look, if you two had been married, that'd be a completely different situation.
I can never marry her.
Oh,
shit. My wife would never give me a divorce. She's a Catholic. It's getting closer. They're walking it in.
Sometime later, Fowler wakes up, removes his canvas hat from his face and looks around. He's alone in the bunker. He puts his hat back on his head, sits up, and finds a handwritten note.
Dear Thomas, I guess I'll be back in Saigon ahead of you, and I wanted to reassure you that I won't go to see Fong until after you return. If you can make the next transport out, you should be back by the end of the week. I can check in with your assistant to see if you made it. If so, I'll come around to see you both together on Friday, say 5 o'clock.
Fowler's being driven by Hing.
Anyone due to go out to Hong Kong?
Some of them Reuters, I believe.
Type this up, will you, and ask him to cable it to London for me?
The big story?
Yes. Massacre at Fat Ziem. Nobody did it, of course. Not the French, not the communists. But there are rumors. What's going on?
I forgot.
What?
It's a rally. A new political party.
Bloody hell.
I think I'd better leave your car here, sir. We can walk.
Fong comes out on the balcony of Fowler's apartment to watch the band, dressed in white uniforms and with a red stripe around their peaked white caps, marching down the middle of the street amid clapping and waving supporters. Thomas Fowler pushes his way through the crowd, with Hing behind him photographing the scene. Fowler waves up to Fong, indicating the numbers of armed soldiers coming down the street. He turns back to take a closer look at the sea of people in front of him.
General Tay. Who made him a general?
He did. He broke away from the French and formed his own army.
General Tay, a man in his early 30s, wears a black forage cap and dark glasses and is surrounded by pith-helmeted soldiers holding their rifles in front of them as they march through the cheering, jostling crowd. Beyond them, Fowler sees Pyle and Joe Tunney standing in a doorway with other Westerners watching the parade. The general waves to the crowd and blows kisses. Fowler glances up at Fong. She smiles back at him. Alden Pyle also sees Fong and watches her transfixed. Later at his apartment, Fowler opens the door to Pyle.
Hello.
Hi.
A Sharpei dog waits at Pyle's side.
You have a dog?
Pyle shrugs.
Come in.
Thanks. Moment.
Pyle looks around the dimly lit apartment expectantly.
Is Fong?
She's gone to see her sister.
Oh.
He shuffles his feet.
Would you like a whiskey?
Oh, just a soda, thanks.
As Fowler's back is turned, the dog jumps onto his bed.
Does he have to do that?
Huh? Duke, come here. Come here.
You called him Duke?
Yeah. Found this guy on the street. Didn't I? Who could turn their back on a mug like that? Huh?
I saw you and Joe Tunney at the parade.
Go sit.
Did you go on to the rally?
Thanks. Yeah, I did. It was really something else.
I thought only American politicians went in for that nonsense. All that was missing was the ticker tape.
Well, you sure didn't forget the brass band. He's a pretty impressive guy, that General Tay.
It doesn't trouble you that he's a complete egomaniac?
Look, I don't want to talk about Fong behind her back. I thought she was going to be here. Her sister told me about her predicament.
And what predicament is that?
I think you know. But you can't marry her, and by living with you, she can never have a proper marriage to a Vietnamese man.
She doesn't need a proper marriage with a Vietnamese man. She's with me. There she is.
The door opens.
Hello, Fong.
My sister is out.
Ah.
Hello.
Hello. It's very nice to see you.
Actually, it's you that Mr. Pyle has come to visit, Fong. So, why don't we all sit down? Unless, of course, you want me to leave.
No, 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 that wouldn't be right.
We shall sit down, then.
Fowler, a large tumbler of whiskey in his hand, ushers Fong towards the armchairs clustered round a coffee table. They sit down and stare up at Pyle, who remains standing, his hands clasped in front of him.
Fire away.
Pyle perches on the arm of the chair nearest to Fong.
Fong. Ever since I met you, and danced with you, and talked with you, I haven't been able to get you out of my thoughts for more than a moment.
Fong gazes up at him steadily.
And I've fallen in love with you.
She smiles, glances across at Fowler, presses her hands into her lap, and looks back at Pyle.
You fall in love with me?
Please believe me when I say I've never behaved like this before. I apologize. It is abrupt and it is ill-mannered, but I'm in love with you.
Fowler gestures at Pyle perched on the arm of the chair.
Shouldn't you be on one knee?
Pyle frowns at Fowler, then looks back at Fong.
Look, Fong, I'm not a rich man, but I do have assets.
Let's toss for her.
What can you offer her?
Oh, Christ.
Listen, I don't expect you to love me right away. That'll come with time.
Yes, you can always make love to the chauffeur while he's at the office.
You have no right to insult her.
Will you shut your bloody dog up?
You can come away with me right now.
Tell him to bugger off and take his dog with him.
Both men watch Fong intently.
No.
She looks straight ahead, avoiding the eyes of both of them.
She said no.
Yes. Sit down, have a scotch.
No, I should go. I'm so sorry. I apologize.
Do you want to smoke a pipe?
A pipe?
Opium.
No. Why would I do that?
The dog pads after its master. Pyle glances back from the doorway and leaves. Fowler and Fong look at each other. Later, outside the Continental Hotel, Fowler reads through a letter he's writing.
I know before we married, you warned me your beliefs meant that there could never be a divorce. All the same, that's what I'm asking for now. The fact is, I love someone very much. I want you to feel affection, act before you have time to think, and just cable me and tell me you agree.
Fong walks up, sits down at Fowler's table, and picks up the menu. Fowler puts the cap on his pen.
I've just asked my wife for a divorce.
She looks up at him, then lowers her eyes to study the menu.
Your sister. Was she really out?
I told you.
She cups her chin in her slender hand, smiling at him fondly.
I thought perhaps she sent you back so that you could meet Pyle. He's very young.
She reaches across the table for Fowler's hand.
That's not so important.
In his office, Fowler reads a telegram. 1 month extension granted. Good work on Fancy M. Investigate massacre further. Stemmins.
Good news.
Hing hands him the London Times.
They printed your story.
I got a cable from Stemmings. This got me a month's reprieve.
Page 10. French break communist siege.
They didn't use much, did they? Nothing here about the villagers that were killed. What did the French papers say?
Headlines. Blame it on the communists, of course.
Well, a month is a month. What else can you tell me about this General Tay?
He holds up a photo of Tay.
He set himself up against both the French and the communists.
Do you think he'd give me an interview if I went up to Holy Mountain?
Difficult to say. Perhaps if he thought he can get his message across.
Well, the problem with that would be getting it past the censor.
No, the real problem would be to get close to the Cambodian border and back before dark. The communists control that road at night. So many Europeans have been killed out there.
A vintage Citroën bounces down a muddy track towards a Vietnamese army checkpoint guarded by a watchtower and a sandbag machine gun rest. A soldier motions the driver to stop.
I am Thomas Fowler of the London Times, and I'm here to interview General Tay.
Can I come up, Lady?
Of Thomas Fowler of the London Times. I am here to see General Tay.
The agitated soldier raises the barrier.
September, October, November. I'd seen Pyle only once since he'd asked Fong to marry him, at the Continental. He'd been polite, of course. How was I? How was Fong? He'd been busy, he said, out of the city, working on his medical program.
Thomas!
So somehow, I wasn't surprised to see him.
Thomas!
I was surprised to be pleased to see him.
Well, what brings you out to these parts?
Well, I was hoping to interview the general, but they've thrown me out of the place.
Oh.
What's your excuse this time?
Well, this is like a test run for us. The French, and typically French way, have been very uncooperative, but General Tay has been good enough to let us set up camp here.
He points to a Red Cross tent.
I'll get him to let you in. C'est bon. Joe Tony's running aid programs with some of the business people close to Tay.
Mr. Moy?
Mr. Pyle.
Pyle, in a white medical coat, talks to a Vietnamese in a pale suit. as Fowler gazes round him at the busy activity in the armed camp. Moy seats Fowler in front of a platform at the mouth of a cave where General Tay sits down behind a desk.
My name is Mr. Moy. The General only has a few moments.
May I first ask you a question?
Please.
What is your relationship to the General?
I'm a businessman and a patriot.
The General lights a cigarette.
Many of the supplies and aid you see here are the result of my efforts. Shall we begin with the first question?
You say you've broken away from the French and Vietnamese forces with which you served. Do any ties remain?
Người Pháp là những kẻ thực dân.
The French are colonialists.
Cho nên, không được tin tưởng được.
Not to be trusted.
Cho nên, cần một người Việt tự chủ, độc lập để lãnh đạo đất nước này.
It will take an independent Vietnamese leader to rule our country.
How does the General expect to launch a successful campaign against the larger forces of the communists and the French with so few men and supplies? And who is providing the means for the General to achieve this victory?
Và ai là người đang cung cấp phương tiện cho thiếu tướng đạt tới thắng lợi?
The General looks at Moy sharply.
Ai đưa hắn vào đây? Hắn có phải thằng khùng, thằng điên không?
Has he been fighting his war in the north?
General Tay stumps out his cigarette, stands, and steps out from behind his desk, folding his arms and staring aggressively. Fowler swallows hard. But as the General steps off the platform towards him, Fowler leans forward conspiratorially.
There was a massacre at Phat Diem. Were your forces present?
Mày là ai? Hả? Một thằng nghiện. Dám hỏi tao những câu như vậy. Tao không đủ thời gian để trả lời những câu như vậy.
Tay glares back at Moy.
Đông ngu rồi!
Regrettably, the General has just recalled that he has another urgent appointment. So, please.
Thank you.
As Fowler puts on his battered canvas hat, he glimpses Joe Tunney watching him from the cave. Back at the camp, Pyle runs up in the rain, carrying an umbrella.
That was quick.
Things didn't go entirely according to plan.
Watch yourself, Joe. I think it's up to something with General Tay.
They walk back to Fowler's Citroen.
Say, can I get a ride back to Saigon with you? There's something wrong with my car.
Yes, of course you can. Hello. Some kind soul has had mine cleaned.
A Vietnamese in black tunic and baggy trousers is washing down the car. Later, at night, Fowler drives Pyle back towards Saigon.
I heard a rumor that you've been recalled to London.
Really? Who told you that?
Fong's sister.
Shit.
What is it?
We're out of petrol. Some bugger up in the mountains must have siphoned it off.
The car coasts to a halt. Fowler looks around. They're in the middle of a watery plain hemmed in by mountains.
They might have some spare petrol in that watchtower.
He gets out of the car, followed by Pyle. Is anybody there? Fowler approaches the stone watchtower which looms over him, silhouetted against the night sky.
It looks like it's deserted. I'll go in and have a look.
Fowler peers inside.
Hello? Il y a quelqu'un là?
Is anybody there? Fowler climbs the ladder and lifts a trap door. Two scared-looking Vietnamese soldiers point their rifles at him. He raises his hands.
Excusez-moi. Ma voiture.
My car down below has run out of gas.
Je t'en peine.
Do you have any gas to sell?
De l'essence à vendre?
No.
Is everything okay?
Yeah, come up.
Hello. Then my friend and I will have to stay here until morning, Fowler says, easing himself through the trap door.
Ici. Jusqu'au le matin.
C'était vendu.
It's not allowed.
Mon ami.
My friend. He introduces Pyle, who climbs warily up into the room.
Jamais de ferme la porte, okay?
Pyle lowers the trapdoor. It's okay. Please, lower your guns, says Fowler. Please, lower them. He's a friend. The soldiers watch nervously as Pyle, sitting on the floor with his back to the wall next to Fowler, drinks from a canteen. Fowler peers out of the watchtower at the watery ditch below. The night wears on. One of the soldiers stirs a cooking pot. The other rests his rifle on his knees, pointing it at the two Westerners sitting on the floor in the far corner of the watchtower. Fowler looks at Pyle.
What are you thinking?
I was wondering what she was doing right now.
Fowler considers Pyle's forlorn face, and his weary eyes fill with some compassion for the younger man.
This morning she met her friends for elevenses at La Fontaine. Ice cream and the latest gossip. On her way home, she stopped at the market for fresh fish for dinner. And now, she's flipping through the pages of magazines, looking at photographs of the royal family and film stars, listening to Bach's well-tempered clavier. I just got her started on Bach.
Fowler gives a self-conscious grin, and Pyle returns his smile gratefully.
Have you had a lot of women, Thomas?
You start out by being promiscuous and end up like your grandfather, faithful to one woman. I know I'm not essential to Fong, but believe me when I tell you that if I were to lose her, for me, it would be the beginning of death.
Pyle nods faintly. An explosion flares on the horizon.
Somebody's had it. There are 30 or 40 of these towers between here and Saigon. They only hit one or two a night, so they don't sound too bad.
So what do you think they did with the communists at night?
These two, they'd fire a shot and run. Why should they die for us? Or the French?
He looks round sharply.
What's that? I thought I saw something move.
Dark shapes are moving in the water. The two soldiers peer through slits in the wall.
Christ, they're here! As far as I can make out, she told them to give us up, or else.
Money!
Pyle grabs one of the rifles. He opens the trap door and they jump down.
What is it?
I think I've twisted my ankle.
Outside, a soldier lobs a Molotov cocktail into the top of the tower. Pyle and Fowler are showered with falling debris. The attacking soldiers set fire to Fowler's car and disappear into the darkness. Pyle helps Fowler hobble into the ditch. Up to their necks in water, they peer out at the burning watchtower. When they're sure the soldiers have moved off, Pyle drags Fowler out of the irrigation ditch.
I'm gonna head up the road to the next watchtower, see if I can find a French patrol. Sit tight, okay?
Pyle goes. Fowler lies on his back, staring up at the burning watchtower. His mind slips back to his first meeting with Huang at the Arc-en-Ciel restaurant. In washed-out colors, Huang is dancing with a sweaty Westerner. Her head is tilted back away from his face. Fowler, dressed in a smart suit and tie, watches from a stool at the bar. The man tries to fondle Huang's behind. She pushes him away, leaves the dance floor, and sits down. The man follows, with Miss High chasing after him. Fowler steps between them and holds out his hand to Miss High.
Hey, hey! May I introduce myself?
Thomas Fowler.
The image of Huang's face dances in the flames of the burning car. Pyle runs up to where Fowler lies at the water's edge. Two French soldiers are following him.
Thomas! Down a patrol.
If I had died, you could have had.
Pyle and the French soldiers stare down at him. Back in Saigon, Fowler, walking with a crutch, climbs the stairs to his apartment with Hing.
And I think you should inform your sources that General Tay has a lot more men than the 100 at their last count. He's a story we should take seriously.
Never underestimate a patriot, sir.
What do you know about this Moy chap? Would he have the means to finance Tay's army?
Moy? He owns a bicycle factory.
Well, I think Joe Tunney is plotting with both he and Tay. And it's more than just foreign aid programs.
I'll see what I can find out, sir.
With both hands clutching the banisters, Fowler reaches the landing and Hing hands him the crutch.
Things are under control at the office. Try to get some rest.
Thank you, Hing.
Hing stares thoughtfully at Fowler's retreating back. Fowler steps into his apartment. Phuong, wearing a simple white ao dai decorated with tiny flowers, is dancing in traditional Vietnamese style, her hands tracing sinuous patterns above her head. Fowler watches entranced. She sees him, stops in mid-gesture and runs into his arms. He lifts her up.
I miss you.
Ow.
Are you all right?
I'm all in one piece.
You got a letter.
A letter?
From London.
Yes.
I fetch it for you.
No. Give me a kiss.
He falls back on the bed, pulling her down on top of him.
I will get it.
She crosses to a chest of drawers, picks up the airmail letter, and returns to the bed. Fowler sits up and takes it from her, studying the handwriting on the envelope.
You look afraid.
I think I'd better have a brandy and soda.
She kisses him and steps down into the living room while Fowler opens the envelope and begins to read. He watches Huang go to the door of the apartment. He slides the letter in the envelope under his pillow.
Pyle, come in, come in.
Pyle comes in, his hands held behind his back.
I drop by and see how you're doing.
Very well, thanks.
Good. How's it like?
I expect my tennis game would suffer, but it wasn't much to begin with.
Pyle produces a bottle of whiskey.
Ah, thank you. I'm glad you dropped by. We have to thank Mr. Pyle for saving my life.
Pyle smiles modestly, but folds his arms and faces Huang.
Thank you.
How's your sister doing?
Sister?
Yes. Alden got her a job with the Americans.
Oh, yes?
She likes it very much. Thank you.
Good. I'm very glad to hear that.
Since you're both here, now is as good a time as any to tell you that I have received a letter from my wife, and she has more or less agreed to give me a divorce.
Huang jumps onto Fowler's lap.
Ow!
Well, that's wonderful.
Huang slips from Fowler's knees and crosses over to Pyle.
Come sit.
Oh, no, thank you. I've got plans.
Thank you for dropping by.
Bye.
Huang follows Pyle to the door. In his office, Fowler is studying photographs of General Tay as Hing speaks into the phone.
Sir,
Pyle strides in, followed by Huang and Miss High.
I trusted you, Thomas.
Always a mistake when there's a woman involved.
Couldn't you have won without lying?
What is it, anyway?
My sister read the letter from your wife. I show it to her because I was so proud, so happy.
How could you treat her like this?
Fry slams down the letter and Pyle snatches it up.
Dear Thomas, you always picked up women like you picked up mud on your shoes.
I'm sorry, Fogg.
So then why did you lie to her?
Obviously, because I wanted to keep her.
It's not love.
Thấy chưa trời ơi, ông thèm chối là mình nói láo.
See, says Miss High, he doesn't even deny he's a liar.
Have you ever stopped to think how sad and lonely this girl will be in England, especially when you decide to leave her?
Shut up, for Christ's sake.
Miss High snatches back the letter.
I don't believe in divorce. My religion forbids it. And so the answer is no. No.
I was taught never to read other people's letters.
I was taught not to tell lies.
Thấy chưa, em nhìn rõ mặt ông chưa? Ông không thoát được chuyện này dễ dàng đâu.
I don't speak Vietnamese.
Get lost!
Miss Hai follows Pyle and Fong out. Hing comes back into Fowler's office.
You are right about Mui. He does have connections.
Can we discuss this some other time, Hing? I am really
very tired. Crates from overseas have been moving through his factory, bypassing French customs. My sources have been unable to determine what they contain.
He's probably got someone on the take.
He's an exporter, not an importer.
Yes, well, about that, we'll do that tomorrow, okay?
No, a shipment just came in this afternoon. It could be gone by the morning.
Fowler steals himself. Hing forces open a pair of doors to the cluttered courtyard of a factory complex and steps inside, followed by Fowler leaning on his stick. Keeping out of sight behind a jumble of equipment, they see an arc welder working on an old Citroën de Cheval. Turning in the direction of the voice, Fowler sees, through the barred windows of an office, Moy in conversation with another man. Hing tugs at Fowler's jacket. They creep towards a door and step inside. Fowler switches on the light. They're in a storeroom full of wooden crates. One crate is stenciled, Joe Tunney, American Legation, Saigon. Another is stenciled, Alden Pyle, American Legation, Trachoma Unit. Inside the crate, some drums labeled Dialacton. Two men walk in at the far end of the storeroom and advance on them menacingly. What are you doing here? I'm looking for Monsieur Moy, says Fowler. He isn't here, says the man who was talking to Moy in his office. He invited me to visit him here. I'm a British journalist, says Fowler, as he and Hing back towards the door.
And I meet
a friend of General Tay. Where is Monsieur Moy?
What is this dialect?
We must leave immediately.
Go. Crazy British. They drink too much. He's no one, says Hing.
What are you doing? I'm gonna save your life. Go!
Later, Fowler comes back to his unlit apartment. He switches on the light and walks stiffly down the steps to the living room.
Fong?
Switching on the lamp above his desk, he writes down the word, Dialacton, on a notepad.
Fong?
He limps towards the half-open door of a wardrobe. Fong's clothes have gone. Fowler bursts into the foyer of the American Legation, where Miss High sits behind a desk.
Good morning. Can I help you?
I think you've done quite enough already.
He pushes past her.
Where's Pyle?
Alden? He's not in the office this morning. He does a lot of his work at home.
I know what he does at home.
What do you mean?
Ask her. She fixed him up with my girl.
Now, Fowler, we can't have scenes in the office.
I know I am behaving badly, but I have every intention of behaving badly. As a matter of fact, this is exactly the kind of situation where one should behave badly.
Please just lower our...
Why don't you butter off?
Thomas, there was a lady here.
This lady and I know each other quite well. She tried to get a rake off from me, but now she's getting one from Pyle.
We have a lot of work to do, Thomas.
If Pyle phones, tell him I called. It would be polite to return a visit.
He turns his back on Tunney and limps out.
How did he get in here?
Fowler staggers into the men's room and shuts himself in the wooden cubicle. Later, he stands in the road opposite the railings surrounding an elegant colonial building and stares at the open shutters of the first floor windows. Through a gap in the gauze curtains, he glimpses Fuang. Inside the room, Fuang takes some postcards from a drawer and walks over to Pyle at his desk.
This is Boston?
No, that's Niagara Falls. So is that. This is Boston. That's Fenway Hall. Can't wait to take you to my country.
He gazes up at her adoringly. Fuang, in a simple white long-sleeve tunic with a mandarin collar, takes some clothes from a suitcase on the sofa and walks to the window.
My friend from school. She go to airport with her boyfriend. He said he'd take her to France.
As she looks through the gap in the curtains, she sees Fowler standing in the street below.
But in the airport, he disappear. Leave her there. So many girls with French boyfriend. No one to marry them.
Fowler hobbles away.
Well, that'll never happen to you.
Still gazing out of the window, she smiles faintly. Pyle stands and comes over to her. Slowly, she turns towards him, and he looks deeply into her face.
I promise.
She looks up at him, then lowers her eyes. Sometime later, Pyle, sitting at a cafe table, gets up as he sees Fowler striding down the road towards his house. A man in a fawn suit stands nearby.
Hi.
Have a nice Christmas.
One long party. Did Fong forget something?
Heard you came by the legation.
Yes. Who's this?
Bodyguard. We all have to have him now.
Are you married yet?
No, I figured I'd wait until we got home and do it properly.
You don't mind living here improperly?
You know, it's hard to talk to you if you're going to be so cynical. I just meant that it'd be good to do it with my parents there.
I had a cable from head office. They want me back.
He goes up the stairs.
Oh, that's,
So it's good that Fong went off with you. If I'd had to leave, she might have ended up as another piece of ass for someone like Granger. At least I know you'll treat her right.
So, does this mean that we can still be friends?
I don't see why not.
Pyle, at the open door of the apartment, offers to shake hands. Fowler, holding a magazine in his hand, shrugs and goes inside.
So, what is dialecton, anyway?
You know about that?
Shouldn't I?
Well, dialecton is a milk-based plastic. It's used for the frames in the eyeglasses.
Are you still in touch with General Tay?
Well, we keep the channels open.
And Moy?
Mr. Moy's been very helpful in helping us get all our supplies to the customs. You know, the French have started charging us for...
You asked me for advice once. Well, here it is. Leave the bloody Third Force to Joe, forget York Harding, and go home with Fong.
Pyle wears a troubled expression.
And would you shut the door on the way out, please?
Fowler turns his back on Pyle, who stares after him for a moment, then leaves. Fowler sits at a table outside the Continental Hotel. Nearby, a woman tucks into her chocolate cake. A man in sunglasses carrying a camera and tripod goes by.
Morning, Larry. What is it today?
Some cockamamie assignment.
As Larry crosses the road, Fowler idly turns his attention to two American women at a nearby table.
Joe Tye said to be out of here by 10:25 on that. What is it anyway? I'm not sure. Is it a demonstration? I don't know.
The women get up to leave. Fowler notices a Vietnamese man getting out of a Citroen de Chavaux across the street and walking away. In the middle of the road, a uniformed policeman on a podium directs cars and bicycles across the intersection. As a car bomb explodes at the intersection, Fowler ducks beneath his table. A second car bomb erupts in a ball of orange flame from the parked Citroen. Pedestrians and cyclists are blown through the air. People run in panic. Fowler picks himself up and races across the street towards the carnage. Bodies and debris litter the intersection. Larry is photographing a man pulling a driver from the burning wreck of his car. Fowler sprints towards the milk bar. A policeman runs towards him, pushing him away.
My friend is in there!
Fowler pushes past the policeman and runs into the shattered interior of the milk bar. The dead and the injured lie sprawled amidst the overturned tables. He kneels next to the body of a young woman in a white audi and tilts her head in his hands to look into her face. Gently he releases her and looks around him appalled. Shocked survivors stumble through the wreckage. Dazed, Fowler makes his way back out into the street. Smoke fills the air like fog. The shells of the two car bombs still burn fiercely. Hing arrives on a bicycle and runs towards the wounded. Fowler wanders among the dead and the dying, stupefied, his jaw slack, his mouth open. A Vietnamese woman slumped against a lamppost cradles the body of her dead child. A street trader lies in the gutter, his clothes bloody and torn, his limbs shattered. Across the street, Fowler sees Alden Pyle, his tie and brown jacket flapping as he runs up. Pyle stops and stares at the destruction, his hand to his head. A woman kneeling over a body in the road gestures beseechingly. A man lying by his overturned trishaw stares up at Fowler and stretches an arm towards him. Fowler and Hing run over and kneel by him. Hing scrabbles around for something to use as a bandage. Pyle drifts as if in a daze past the legless torso of a young boy lying by a toppled motorbike. A woman clutches at the severed stump of her leg. Larry photographs an injured man as rescuers try to help him to his feet. Fowler looks up to see Pyle take a neatly folded handkerchief from his pocket, reach down, and dab at a patch of blood on his trouser leg. Later, Fowler stands at the open window of his office, staring down into the street, blood dripping onto his shoe.
Did you cut your hand, sir?
Hing, his shirt stained with blood, stands at the door. Fowler examines his own hands.
Yes. How is it down there?
30 dead. Probably 20 more by morning.
Fowler pours some water into a basin.
Started arresting communist sympathizers.
There was a woman with a baby. She covered it with her hat.
As he washes the blood from his hands, images of the scene replay themselves before his eyes, the young Vietnamese mother looking up at him reproachfully.
This man, he died right in front of his family.
Fowler's mind flashes back to a woman and her daughter squatting over a badly wounded man who claws at the collar of his jacket.
Pyle. Did you see him? He spoke Vietnamese. Vietnamese. Like it was his, you know, native language.
He relives seeing Pyle at the scene.
Larry! Come over here! Moving! Right here! On this side! Come over here!
A Vietnamese policeman tries to drag the photographer away. Pyle rounds on him. As the policeman persists, Pyle shoves him away angrily.
Understand? Now go make yourself useful somewhere else.
Dialectin is milk-based plastic. We use it for the frames.
Stories of eyeglasses. This year?
At his desk, Fowler looks through a reference book and thinks back.
Casein plastics. Made from milk protein.
York Harding, dangerous to democracy. He's the one who put forward the idea of a third form.
Used in the manufacture of imitation tortoiseshell and jade. Trade name, Dialecton. Also used as a plasticizer in explosive compounds.
Joe Tony's running aid programs with some of the business people close to Tate.
Dialecton is a
Moi. Milk
plastic. French are colonialists, not to be trusted.
And Tate.
It will take an independent Vietnamese leader to rule our country.
The Americans have been supplying them with materials to make bombs.
Your party, dangerous to democracy.
Fowler sees conspiracies everywhere.
Hing interrupts him.
I have some contacts who would like to speak to your friend. Joe Tunney.
Hing, still in his blood-stained shirt, shakes his head.
Pyle? They feel he can give them important information about all this. You're saying Pyle is OSS? I believe the new name is CIA.
Fowler looks down thoughtfully.
Anyone can speak to him.
It's not so easy. He's followed by protectors. But if you asked to meet with him, man to man, he would come along.
Fowler goes to the window, picks up a cloth, and wipes the cut on his hands.
These contacts, are they communist?
Officially, no. Unofficially, yes.
I don't know.
Suppose you invite him to dinner at the Vieux Moulin, say, between 9 and 9:30. It's quiet near there. My friends can speak to him undisturbed.
Maybe he's engaged.
At 6:30, my contacts will have someone in the street outside your apartment. All you have to do, if you decide to invite him to dinner, go to the window and open a book.
Fowler blinks and lowers his eyes.
What will they do to him?
I promise you, my contact will act as gently as the situation allows.
In the street below, a cart of dead bodies is wheeled away.
Sooner or later, Mr. Fowler, one has to take sides if one is to remain human.
Hing gazes unflinchingly at Fowler and swallows hard. Fowler looks away, considering his course of action. Later, at his desk in his apartment, he types a letter.
Pyle, I need to speak to you about what happened this morning in the Place Garnier.
Fuong, dressed in a Western-style pink halter-neck dress, white peep-toe high-heeled sandals, and carrying a rattan basket, stops outside Pyle's apartment and picks up the letter tucked under the door. She steps inside. Pyle looks out from an inner room.
Fuong.
A letter for you.
Thank you. Just give me a few minutes.
Behind him, General Tay and Moy are talking. Fuong glances down at the blood on Pyle's trousers. Pyle steps back into his meeting. Fuong goes into the bedroom and slumps down on the edge of the bed to wait. At dusk in the street, a man in a pith helmet watches the window of Fowler's apartment. Pyle with his dog comes into Fowler's building. He walks across a plank set over some unfinished tiling on the lobby floor and goes upstairs. The dog leaves a paw print in the still wet cement. Fowler, his expression rigid, picks up a tumbler of whiskey and opens the door.
Come in.
I got a message.
So I see.
Pyle settles the dog down and hands in his pockets turns back to Fowler.
I'd love a drink.
I've only got hard liquor and you're probably on duty. As a matter of fact, I've noticed you're rarely off duty these days.
Whiskey be fine. People change.
Or maybe they just never were what we thought they were. Hmm?
Who of us is, Thomas? Who of us is?
Pyle moves across the room, sets down his glass on a small table and lights a cigarette.
I suppose you want to talk about General Tay.
Yes. And Mr. Moy. And Dialecton.
Fowler moves a pile of books from an armchair and sits down.
Well, we met with Tay this afternoon.
He's in Saigon? Come to see how his explosives worked?
You know, his original target was a military parade. I don't mind telling you that we were pretty tough on him.
Did you tell him we weren't going to support him anymore?
We told him that if he steps out of line again...
He tried to kill you on the road to Saigon.
No. Tried to kill you.
Fowler frowns.
You knew?
Well, I suspected he might try something. Or one of his officers might, so I tagged along just in case.
Then you're a fool if you think you can control General Tay.
In a war, you use the tools you've got. And right now, he's the best we have.
Yes, and in the meantime, even more people must die.
Last year, the U.S. government gave $210 million in military assistance to the French in Indochina. If we are going to stop communism and underwrite a third way, we need to give the people a leader who they admire.
Tomorrow morning, when Congress reads the reports and sees the photographs of the communist atrocities in the square, they are going to give us that support. The French aren't going to stop the communists. They haven't got the brains, and they haven't got the guts.
Fowler picks up the pile of books in front of him and goes to tidy them away.
How did I fit into all this? Am I part of your cover? Or a source of information? Or did you have your eye on Fong all the time?
You and Fong? I never planned for any of that to happen. Believe me, it would have been easier if I never met either one of you.
But you did, and you lied to us.
What do you want me to tell you, Thomas? That I take no action? That I have no opinion?
Through the window, Fowler sees the man in the street below.
Tell me that you don't mean any of this. Tell me that you were only obeying orders. Or tell me that after what you saw in the square, those children who did nothing and hurt no one, tell me that you were so confused and horrified at how brutal and insane these actions are. Tell me how your love for Fong has caused you to have some doubts.
But it is because of Fong that I am even more determined. Let's just look at Fong. This beauty, this daughter of a professor, taxi dancer, mistress of an older European man. Well, that pretty well describes the whole country, doesn't it? Look, Thomas, we are here to save Vietnam from all of that. What happened in the square today makes me sick. But in the long run, I'm going to save lives.
Fowler raises a finger and points at Pyle.
It's you, isn't it? Joe Tunney, the staff of the legation, Mr. Moy, General Tay. They all take their fucking orders from you, Pyle. York Harding prattles on about a third force in that book you carry around. You've actually gone out and made one.
I don't think you see the big picture, Thomas.
Fowler turns away.
No, I do not see the big picture.
He walks slowly to the window, picks up a book, and opens it. From across the street, the man looks up to the window.
You know this poem. I walk down the street and I don't give a damn. The people, they stare and they ask who I am.
And if by chance I should run over a cad, I can pay for the damage, if ever so bad. We can disagree and remain friends, can't we, Thomas?
Fowler turns back to the window.
Yes. Look, I'm sorry. Let's have dinner and put all this mess behind us. 9 o'clock, Vieux Moulin, okay?
Hey, that sounds great. You know, I miss our conversations.
Vieux Moulin it is.
All right, then. I'll tell Fung that she can have dinner with her sister. And I'll get her to meet me here afterward.
As he goes, Fowler turns to look out of the window. The man has gone.
Look, if you can't make it, come straight here. I'll wait for you.
All right. I'll see you soon, Thomas.
In the half light, Fowler walks slowly back to his armchair, picks up his whiskey glass from the coffee table, and drains it. Later that night, he crosses a wooden bridge over a narrow walkway to the Vieux Moulin restaurant. At both ends of the bridge, French soldiers are keeping guard. Fowler raises a forefinger to the maitre d', who points towards an open-air table on the terrace, overlooking the waterfront. Granger, the American journalist, already looking the worse for drink, watches as Fowler makes his way past the other diners and sits down. Fowler looks out across the river towards the broad wooden pier connecting the city to the spit of land, which the Vieux Moulin shares with its neighboring Chinatown restaurants and market stalls. Pyle, his hands deep in the trouser pockets of his white suit, his dog on a leash by his side, strolls into view and starts across the walkway. As Fowler catches sight of Pyle, his eyes begin searching among the other promenaders on the pier. Halfway across, Pyle stops and looks out over the water, almost wistfully. He closes his eyes, turns, and carries on to the island. Fowler loses sight of him. Two Vietnamese men, one eating at a market stall, the other walking at the side of the road, cut in front of Pyle, slowing him down. Two more men close in behind him. One of them ducks down, lifts Pyle's trouser leg, and snatches Pyle's gun from his ankle holster. The other presses a knife between his shoulder blades.
War.
The four men hustle pile towards the crowded market. Fowler, anxiously scanning the waterfront, starts as Granger flops into a chair beside him.
I need to talk to somebody who speaks English. Today is my son's birthday tonight.
In a narrow, deserted side street, Pyle's captors pinion his arms, and one of them holds a knife to his throat.
I need to ask you some questions.
I'm from the American legation. Just trying to help people see.
Pyle fights free of them and runs.
Thing is, I got a cable from my wife.
Fowler, hardly listening, peers into the night.
My boy has polio. They don't know if he's gonna make it.
Pyle stumbles through a maze of unlit alleyways.
I don't care if he's crippled. I just don't want him to die.
Running blindly, his white suit flapping, Pyle looks back over his shoulder as he careers through the labyrinth of deserted back streets, the four men racing after him. As he turns a corner, a Vietnamese steps out of an alley and comes towards him. Pyle squints at his face, half hidden in shadow. The man, wearing a pale zip-up jacket, produces a knife. He plunges it into Pyle's chest. Pyle clings to the man, eyes wide in disbelief and pain. The assailant twists the knife, pulls it out of Pyle's chest and steps back. Light from a doorway falls across his face. It is Hing.
I'm sorry, I've just got to get some air.
Fowler abandons Granger, hurries away from the restaurant and across the wooden bridge. In the alleyway, Hing and the four communists watch as the dying Pyle writhes in the gutter. Hing slips off the zip-up jacket, wraps the bloody knife in it, and tosses it to one of the other men. Throw him in the river, he says, and goes. Fowler, hurrying along the bustling waterfront, past the lantern-lit market stalls, slows to a halt as Hing, in clean shirt and trousers, rides past on his bicycle. Their eyes lock. Hing's face betrays no emotion. He cycles onto the pier and makes his way unhurriedly back to the city. Several nights later, Fowler sits in his apartment alone, listening to the radio. He leaps to his feet.
From?
It's Inspector Vigo.
I'm sorry to bother you, but would you mind to come downstairs with me for a moment?
What do you want?
There's something I would like to show you.
Fowler steps out onto the landing.
It seems Monsieur Pyle came to see you the night he died.
So what, Vigo?
You said he did not.
Vigo starts down the stairs.
By the way, we found Pyle's dog. They cut his throat.
Vigo squats down beside the unfinished tiled flooring in the entrance hall.
You see here? Pyle's dog had cement between its toes. This was poured on the afternoon of his murder.
So what does that prove?
Vigo stands, wiping his hands on a handkerchief.
The patron of the Vieux Moulin told me that night you asked for a table for one, not two.
I have nothing more to add to my original statement.
They stand face to face in the dark hallway.
Nothing.
You know I didn't kill him, Vicar. There's a war on. People are dying every day.
Vigo and Fowler look at each other without resentment, an unspoken but shared knowledge in their eyes. At night, fishing boats bob on the river. Light from the paper lanterns hanging from their awnings dances on the surface of the water. In the Arc-en-Ciel nightclub, a hostess toys idly with her roll of tickets. Fowler, wearing a smart suit and tie, but with his collar unbuttoned, sits back on a bar stool, glass in hand, and looks around. A few couples have taken to the dance floor. Taxi dancers stand around patiently, or sit at tables drinking with clients. Fuang appears. She's wearing a white Western-style sleeveless dress with a cinched waist and flared skirt. Above the cupped bodice, a thin gauze covers her neck and shoulders. Her hair is pinned up and she carries a white handbag. Fowler watches as she crosses the room and sits by herself at the edge of the dance floor. He goes over to the hostess, gives her a few coins, and she hands him a ticket. Fowler makes his way between the tables to where Fuang, her hands resting demurely on the bag in her lap, sits inert, her eyes lowered. He offers her the ticket. She doesn't look up.
Ask another girl.
I don't want another girl.
Slowly she raises her eyes to the ticket, and then to his face. A faint smile softens the line of her mouth. And she takes the scrap of paper. Fowler leads her out to join the other couples. From a desk on the edge of the dance floor, Fuang's sister, Miss Hai, watches without expression as they dance.
Will you come back now, Fuang? Will you come back to me?
To London.
No. Not to London.
Then I don't come back.
Please, I can't take you to London. Because I'm not going. I'm not leaving here.
They've stopped dancing. Fuang, with tears welling up in her eyes, looks into his face.
Never. Will you come back to me?
She holds his gaze. She leans her head into his chest and he wraps his arms around her. Miss Hai watches coldly. Sitting at the desk in his apartment, Fowler types in uppercase letters. U.S. Ambassador announces increase in American aid. He looks up as Fuang comes into the room. She's wearing a simple pale lilac ao dai. He smiles at her affectionately as she walks slowly up to the desk.
Will you take down my hair?
Yes.
Turning her round so that her back is towards him, Fowler removes the two wooden combs from Fong's hair and lovingly smooths out the long, dark, shining tresses.
Do you miss him?
Fuang turns round and looks down at Fowler.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Why are you sorry?
I don't know. I just feel that I ought to apologize to someone.
She smiles, sits on his lap, and kisses his forehead.
Not to me. Never to me.
And she kisses him on the lips.
They say you come to Vietnam and understand a lot in a few minutes. The rest has got to be lived. They say whatever it was you were looking for, you will find here. They say there is a ghost in every house. And if you can make peace with him, he will stay quiet.
As Fowler types, a succession of headlines from the London Times appear. May 1954. French defeat signals withdrawal from Vietnam. Ceasefire means end to conflict between France and Vietnam is near. July 1954. Communists to rule North in divided Vietnam. Negotiators at peace talks agree to split Vietnam at 17th parallel, ending conflict. March 1959. Communist leader declares war to unite Vietnam. Ho Chi Minh changes tactics from political to military struggle. U.S. increase military support to South Vietnam Army. Green Berets will act as advisors to combat increased attacks by Communist North. March 1965, U.S. begins airstrikes against North Vietnam. Strategic bombing campaign is warning to Ho Chi Minh. August 1965, ground operations begin. 184,300 U.S. troops in Vietnam. Marines clash with Communist forces following beach assault. December 1966, 495,000 U.S. forces now in Vietnam. President Johnson reinforces commitment to fight Communists. A Times newspaper photograph of a wounded American soldier fades to black. This audio description was written and produced at IMS, sound production at Aquarium. This video has been made available by the RNIB Home Video Service. Unit Production Manager Catherine Bishop, First Assistant Director Steve Andrews, Second Assistant Director Jacinta Hain. Cast: Thomas Fowler, Michael Caine, Alden Pyle, Brendan Fraser, Fong Doty Hai Yen, Inspector Vigo Radha Chevaja, Hing Zi Ma, Joe Tunney, Robert Stanton, Bill Granger, Holmes Osborne, General Tay, Huang Hai, Mr. Moy, Ferdinand Huang, Fong's sister, Pam Ti Mai Hua, French Captain, Matthias Meckers, Watchtower Soldiers, Kevin Tran, Lap Fan, American Photographer, Tim Bennett, Dancing American, Jeff Truman, House of 500 Girls singer, Hong Tung, Moy's henchman, Nguyen Ha Fong, House of 500 Girls woman, Navia Nguyen, American women at Continental Hotel, Lucia Noyce and Hilary Douglas, Assassins, Daniel Hung, Nguyen Kim Huan, Trinh Mai Nguyen, Trong Pham, Vietnamese policeman, Tran Do Luc, Vietnamese guard, General Tay's Nguyen Cong Li, French soldier, George Mangos, French singers at Lac en Ciel, Natasha Hunter, Martine Monroe, Hotel Continental maitre d', José de la Vega, Vieux Moulin maitre d', Ronan Rora, French woman, Susan Parry, mechanic in Moy's garage, Nguyen An Dung, Pyle's bodyguard, Peter Holsworth, Lac en Ciel band, Ngoc Tuan Huang, Tri Slamabatan, Erwin Abarico, June Javier, Van Hook Nguyen, Mark Zato, Asghar Nolano, Douglas Gallagher, Nicholas Parry, Vov Dillon. Doubles: Jim Goodall, Bernard Bollard, John Walton, Sam Coates, Ashley Fairfield, IMF producer Matthias Dale, IMF executive producers Volker Schautz and Dieter Nobbe, IMF line producer Oliver Hengst, second unit director Dang Nat Min. Music: Nuoc Non Lan Song, written by Huang Quy, performed by Man Phat. Tieng Dan Anita, written by Huang Chong and Quo Bao, performed by Mok Lan. Tieng Sao Chong Huang, traditional, performed by So Lin Wong. Monange, lyrics by Jean Ferdin, Bruno Cocatrix, 1940 Warner Chapel Music France SA. Used by permission of Warner Chapel Music Australia Pty Limited. Performed by Leo Marjan. Song from Hugh, traditional, performed by Lo Nguyen Ti, Do Ti Le Tuyet, Le Ti Tang Mai. Exterior Lac en Ciel, written by William Motzing. Mac Long, written by Can Tan, performed by Ngoc Bao. Soi Moi, written by Van Cao, performed by Huang Nong. Mademoiselle de Paris, composed by Durand, Conte, Maschwitz, 1948, Ed Musical, Continental, Inter Song, Warner Chapel Music Australia, Pty Limited, performed by Natasha Hunter. Tien Tai, written by Van Cao, performed by Huang Nong. J'ai deux amours, composed by Vincent Scotto, Gio Koga, Henri Varna, performed by Natasha Hunter. Besame Mucho, written by Consuelo Velasquez, Ricardo Lopez Mendez, Sunny Skylar. Our Love Affair, written by Arthur Freed and Roger Edens, 1940 EMI Feist Catalog Inc. Tien Goi Nyang Nien, The Call to Youth, written by Lu Hu Fu, performed by the Army Music Band. 11 Hours, written by Joey Rand, performed by Joey Rand. Je suis Swing, composed by André Honnez, Johnny Hess, copyright 1939, Edition Musicale Ray Ventura. Used by permission of Warner Chapel Australia Pty Limited. Performed by Johnny Hess. La Vie en Rose, music by Louis Guy, lyrics by Edith Piaf. Performed by Louis Armstrong, courtesy of MCA Records, Inc. So Do I, written by Johnny Burke and Arthur Johnston. Ann Rachel Music Corporation and J. Albert & Son, Pty Limited. Song for Fong. Composed by Craig Armstrong. Lyrics by Craig Armstrong and Hong Nung. Performed by Hong Nung. June Light, composed by Jack Trombi, Rouge Music Limited to Wolf Limited. Dick Mao Beat Kim Lang, traditional, performed by Ko Nam Can To. Mon Homme, composed by Maurice Ivan, Jacques Charles, Albert Wilmetz. Copyright Salabert Society, D.A. Asherberg, Hopwood & Crew Limited. Used by permission of Warner Chapel Music Australia Pty Limited. Performed by Sidney Bechet. La Seine, composed by Guy Lafarge, Flavien Monod. Copyright 1948, Société des Éditions Royalty. Used by permission of Warner Chapel Music Australia Pty Limited. Performed by Christian Dolislager. Insensiblement, composed by Paul Mizrahi. Édition Imperia, assigned to Warner Chapel Music France SA. Used by permission of Warner Chapel Music Australia Pty Limited. Additional music by Guy Gross. The filmmakers would like to thank the following for their assistance: Vietnam, the Ministry of Culture and Information, Cinema and International Departments, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, the Ministry of Public Security, Immigration Department, the Ministries of Defense and Trade, the General Department of Finance, the People's Committee of Ho Chi Minh City, Hanoi, Quang Nam, Ninh Binh and Hai Tay provinces, the Australian Consulate General, Ho Chi Minh City, the Australian Embassy, Hanoi, the Continental Hotel, Ho Chi Minh City, the Caravelle Hotel, Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam Feature Film Company, Hanoi, Hong Nat, Waterford, Wedgwood, Australian, Royal Dalton. With thanks to Lisa Filippetto, Kathy Goodman, Philip Roop, Tom Tot Quin Du, Alex Brown, Egidio Rodriguez. Major League Baseball Properties, Inc., The Times, London. Poem Dipsicus by Arthur Hugh Clough. No animals were harmed in the making of this film. Filmed on location in Ho Chi Minh City, Hoi An, Ninh Binh, Hanoi City, Vietnam, and at Fox Studios, Sydney, Australia. Cameras and lenses from Panavision. Lighting and Equipment Vietnam, PS Services. Lighting and Equipment Australia, Panavision Lighting, Premier Lighting. Soundtrack available on Sony Classical. Copyright 2001, IMF, Internationalen Medien and Film GmbH & Co., 2 Productions KG, DTS and Dolby Sound. The persons and events in this motion picture are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons or events is unintentional. This motion picture is protected under laws of the United States, Australia, and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. Intermediate Film Distribution Limited, IMF, all rights reserved.